To be your host today. Oh, get ready. You know there is just so much going on the planet, and oh my gosh, nothing, I mean, the swines are flying, or it's swine flu, something is going on. There is just this trauma, that trauma, everywhere you go, trauma and drama. Well, we know that at the spiritual level, that's not really the case, but at a global level, so much of that is going on. Well, occasionally, because of our commitment to bringing value, sometimes an extraordinary gem comes our way. And today, a wonderful woman, Carol Coombs, she is an escapee. And I don't think she calls herself that, but when I describe Carol a little bit, turns out that she was living in Santa Barbara, California, which... And it was not a bad place to be living. My dear friend Jack Canfield lives there, and so many other good people in that area. Well, she first went to Peru in 1984 and visited the Sacred Valley. And she was so captivated that she continued to return time and time again. And in 1994, she left California and moved, left the United States, probably didn't say goodbye to President Clinton, who was in office at that time, but she went on her merry way down there to Peru, and guess what? She built and established a very unique and beautiful, I'll get the pronunciation from her, it's a garden retreat center, and then this thing called Chakra Gardens. I know many of you have heard of chakras, energy centers of the body. Well, who knew there were chakra gardens? Well, she was guided by nature as well as the rich Andean love of the region in the creation of seven gardens, and has created an amazing book, yes, by the name, guess what? Yes, Chakra Gardens, and it's called Opening the Senses of the Soul. And so we're going to hear from her, and then you'll have an opportunity to add this to your life. So here we go. Welcome, welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Well, this is such a treat to have you on and to begin our month of May, and they, you know, have Maypole and just different kinds of dances for fertility and just celebration of planting, and here you are, our perfect guest.
Well, May time is just the most beautiful month in the Andean Mountains, so I'm very pleased to be talking to you at this time of year.
Ah, and so you are there, and I'd love to, because we now know of a place. I mean, we think of perhaps if we've heard of Peru and Machu Picchu, but this is like a new opening for us to learn about about your place there in Chakra Garden. So can you talk a bit about your background and, you know, and what led you to end up in a remote place in High Peru?
Well, as you will hear from my accent, I was born and grew up in South Africa and moved to California, as you described, from 1975 to 1995, when I decided to move to Peru because my children had grown up. The last child had left high school and was already in university, and I was following my passion because for 10 years, while my children were growing up, I went on a trip first to Peru and then kept going back, and I just loved the country. It was an immediate connection for me, which I couldn't really explain because Peru was very much a third world country 20 years ago, and I created my own travel company so that it was an excuse for me to go back every year with groups of friends. I started off in Santa Barbara with a lot of girlfriends who asked me, why do you keep going back to Peru and then eventually take us? And then I opened it up to other people in California and all over the states, and that provided me with a means to keep going back and to explore the culture and the people. And it turned out that there was a spiritual practice that was very ancient, very traditional, that was still in place in the Andean Mountains. We are situated between Cusco, where you would land if you flew to see Machu Picchu, and Machu Picchu. It's called the Sacred Valley. It's about an hour and a bit from Cusco, and it was a sacred valley to the Incan people, and you'll know why if you visit there, because the climate is lovely. Although it's the Andes, it's not as high as Cusco. You can grow things all year round. So the Inca used to come here for spiritual renewal and were able to grow crops and things. And so that's the place that I decided in 14 years ago to move to.
Wow. Wow. Now we have this beautiful place, and I guess your background there is now kind of what, like a retreat center there?
Well, when I came here, I must admit I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't plan to build chakra gardens, and I didn't plan to build Wilca Tika. Wilca Tika is the Quechua word, and it means sacred flower. And I was always interested in gardening, both in South Africa and then in California. And Santa Barbara had a beautiful garden. So I was struck by the way things grew here in the Andes, the vegetables, the fruit, the lettuce. And I guess I needed to do something that was really calling to my soul at the time, the fact that I just came here on my own and bought a piece of land. It was very rocky, as I found out after I'd purchased it, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but there was a very old tree that attracted me to this particular piece of land, and I used to just go and sit under there and ordered, I asked some people to help me build a house, and because it was just me, I was able to keep it the way I like, made from earth materials, everything very natural, gardening organically. And so from that beginning, now 14 years ago, everything else happened. It just happened.
Wow. Wow, that is just amazing. And then, of course, when we think of chakras and the energy centers of the body, then the term putting that together with gardens, so I'm kind of curious about what is a chakra garden?
Well, because I was attracted to this very ancient tree, I didn't know at the time that it was almost 1,000 years old, according to botanists and healers and spiritual people who visit us. So it was a very ancient, old tree. And while the building and construction was going on every day, building with mud, things taking a long time, hiring people to clear the stones, I would sort of retreat to sit under the tree. And clearly I could feel the energy coming through my crown chakra as I sat there. And it was almost in the early days I sat there thinking, what am I doing here? You know, I have nothing around me, no electricity, no telephone, no television. It was like that for a few years. But the tree would send me all the things that I needed. Strange as that might sound, you know, if I said, where am I going to find a proper gardener? The Quechua are the name of the people who live here, the indigenous people. And hiring them, I started asking questions about the plants and about the building and the construction. And I actually enjoyed it a lot because there are no rules and restrictions upon me in those days. No building inspectors like in Santa Barbara. You can't blink without getting a permit. And suddenly I was free to do what I want, build without plans, put a wall up where I wanted, and it really became fun. The Quechua people are really sweet. They're very accommodating. I mean, 14 years later, the same people are working for the guest house and do the gardens, and they needed work, and they were my neighbors. So the whole relationship was very, very good. They needed the work. I needed the help, and they would teach me, and I would teach them. And little by little, we constructed guest rooms. At first, my house, and then I got the hang of the building, so I wanted to improve upon it. And I kept saying, well, just one more room, just one more room. And if I tell you today, we have 26 guest rooms, and the place is big. It is, you know, we've got yoga studios. So it wasn't a tiny little project. It sort of just mushroomed. I wasn't in a big hurry to have it done because there were no plans. And my groups continued to come once or twice a year, and that was enough to keep me going. You know, take people around, show them Machu Picchu, the sites. And then the best part was that, you know, healers arrived at my doorstep, and I found that the actual Andean ceremonies and their love for Pachamama, Pachamama's Mother Earth, and she's alive and well here, and part of their culture goes back thousands of years where they've always honored and respected Pachamama. So in fact, the people I brought to Peru started learning from these old traditions that the Quechua have been practicing for all these years. And we began to do some of the ceremonies, which is all about honoring the earth. And, you know, that ties in perfectly today to where all of us in Western countries are being told, you know, it's really time to change and go back to old practices, which is simply honoring the earth and honoring each other and helping each other. So those were the things that really attracted me and got me involved in the whole story.
Wow, this is wonderful. I mean, there's creating this bridge. I mean, before we got into a civilization that was urbanized and industrialized, connecting to the earth was not an issue, but
that's
now,
right.
My God, we need it desperately.
Yes, and the wonderful thing here is that, you know, if you go to the main city, the, you know, capital Lima, it is as urbanized as anywhere on the planet. But when you cross into the Andes, what was so precious about being here is you had all these communities, and they were very, you know, subsistent living farmers. And so it was very important for them to keep up the natural agricultural practices and do things naturally so that they could get food, and they were sort of away from the churches and dogmatic kind of practices that you get all over South America. And they were able to just keep honoring their own way of life, and that was what I tapped into and found so fascinating over the years.
Wow. Now, I mean, to me, this is just a wonderful experiment, I guess you would call it, or just a way of life that you've created for yourself that's so nourishing to others. And this book of yours, I've got to tell you, and I know you've heard this before, the Chakra Garden book, extraordinarily beautiful pictures and some wonderful, inspiring writing. So this kept you busy for a while, I bet.
Well, you know, the process of creating 7 main chakra gardens, the truth is it took me almost 12 years because, again, I wasn't in a hurry. I wasn't going anywhere. And after I worked with the I sat under the tree, I would go and create a little garden near the water, and that clearly became the water garden. And then I'd look for a place in the sun, because in winter in the Andes it gets dark very early and gets quite cold. So I noticed that some of my friends were always gravitating to the sun. And I had written a book before I moved to Peru on the Quechua traditions and practices. And I was very familiar with all the symbols that they used. And to my surprise, the ancient Incan symbol honoring the sun, the chacana, was how I formatted the gardens. I used those shapes. And then the healers would come and we'd talk about the heart, and then that became the heart garden. And then the music, you know, Peruvians play a lot of music. I'm sure you've heard them in your organic markets. And the music is an important part of their life. So we built a meditation room that turned into a garden to honor music. So if you know, the water became the second chakra, the Pachamama became the earth and the root chakra. The music became the throat chakra. The Aini, the giving and receiving, became the heart chakra. So everything just really slotted into place. And funny as it sounded to, it's actually funny because I haven't talked about this format before, but everything seemed, in retrospect, looking back, to have already had some kind of a plan for me. The way all the symbols, the Andean information, my knowledge of chakras was based on yoga practices. Things like that just all fell into place, as if nature had this little plan for me.
Wow.
Does that sound strange to you?
Well, I can relate to that a little bit. Sometimes here in our culture, where it's like pull yourself up by your bootstraps and create the life of your dreams, that is kind of puts forward the idea of personal responsibility in terms of, okay, this is all happening and I'm doing it and I'm directing it, which I guess to a certain extent there is that element, and yet you're talking about something of being connected when you would sit at that thousand-year-old tree and connect to something larger than yourself and be supported in a bigger plan.
Well, I feel that now, but in retrospect, you know, at the time I didn't realize that.
Ah.
You know, there's a funny story that sort of proved that to me. Just about 3-4 years ago, a feng shui master from New York happened to be here with his group, and he invited me to go around my gardens from the aspect of feng shui, whether the energy was correct or not. And when he got to the heart chakra garden, he said, "Isn't this perfect? This garden is placed right in the center of the property." And I had to smile, because in actual fact, it used to be the edge of the property, but just 3-4 years ago, I bought the adjoining property to expand it. And it turned out that it was in the center of the property, but I didn't know that when I originally built the garden there. Little things like that were sort of always making me smile, that I had the support of nature and nature spirits, and when I just sort of went along with any insights that I received, it always worked out. It worked out almost perfectly, you know, the positioning of the gardens, how people would react to them, the work they could do in them if they wanted, and if they didn't want, they could just enjoy the beauty of the flowers, you know, or have a rest from the crazy tourist activities.
Sure. Huh. Now, that's extraordinary. One of the things to help people, because I know as more individuals learn about this and more foundations learn about what you're doing there, they're going to want to know, you've created a nonprofit organization. I guess, can you talk a little bit about that, helping, you know, with the Quechua and the Andean people?
The Quechua children,
things? Yes.
Well, I'd love to talk about that, because it always helps quite a lot. You know, in the early days before I moved here, I was researching material for the first on the traditions and wisdom of the Quechua people, because I was taking groups around and there was nothing at the time written in English on the subject. And in fact, a lot of the guides were not talking about it because, you know, they'd been brought up Catholic and basically they didn't want to start talking about Mother Earth and things like that. And they weren't really proud to admit that that was part of their beliefs. And then I noticed more Americans coming and really wanting to know more about it. So I started traveling around the Andes myself, you know, with guides and friends sometimes, gathering the information and the stories that I put in the first book. And on one of those journeys, we had to take photographs when the book was being published. And that's when I met some teachers. They came out of a shack. This is at 14,000 feet. There were no roads. We had to go up there by horseback. It was freezing cold. And this teacher invited my girlfriend, who was taking the pictures, and I to sleep inside the little schoolroom, a one-room school. And, of course, we stayed the next day and saw these children. There were about 15 of them of all ages. The one teacher was nothing. She hadn't been paid her salary in a year because the government doesn't sponsor schools in the way it's supposed to work. And especially in those days, they were going through difficult times. And so when I actually moved to, I kept in touch with the teacher and, of course, encouraged our groups to leave little gifts or offerings of money. Once I moved here in 1995, she found me and we arranged. By now there was a road built up to the school and we started taking the groups. And honestly, the group almost called the visit to the school children to meet these little children who wore traditional ponchos, the bright colors. They were very sweet. They'd never seen foreigners in their life. And the interaction was so special, it became a regular feature and still is of all the tours that we bring to Peru. And so that's how the Children Fund started, but at first very small little bits of money. And then later one or two people were trying to offer us enough money that we were able to build a schoolhouse for these teachers so that they'd be a little more comfortable. And then, of course, a library. And so it went until we were building classrooms and being called to different mountaintops. And that's when we established it as an official tax not-for-profit Wilcatika Children's Fund. And because I received so much help in this book in terms of editing and photography, people were taken up with the Children's Fund. We all just decided that the donations of this book go totally to the Children's Fund. And today we're working with three or four communities, and we sometimes have to provide hot lunch. Right now we started a secondary school because for three, 4 years these children have been graduating out of sixth grade with nowhere to go. They're so isolated. And when I was doing things like that. So it's a wonderful interactive thing. The guests come, they see a real, authentic school that no American would ever believe is possible because they were so run down to start with. They get no equipment, no books, no desks. If the teachers get a salary, they're usually happy. And so that's how the whole project started and continues.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. This is extraordinary as an example, and then the education. For a little more detail, when you say children, I don't know how far along, because we think here in the United States, and to speak of children, we say K through 12, as a way of
yes.
speaking about that. And I don't know, because there's a movement here in the States for homeschooling. Different, and then there's Montessori, there's Waldorf kind of schools. I'm just kind of wondering, how far are you able to go with what you're doing?
Well, you know, there is an educational system in place in Peru, so it would be a regular school from K to ideally 12, probably only in the cities. So what they started off was one of the governments in 40 years ago did build these schools, and today they are functioning just as a school would have been in South Africa. When I lived there, I was a school teacher. They come in at kindergarten now, and they go as far as sixth grade up in the mountains. They've decided that after sixth grade, there is no future for them. Now, they are speaking their mother tongue language, which is Quechua, but the official language of Peru is Spanish. So another obstacle for these children was, if they ever want to get jobs down in the valleys, where would they be able to find work if they didn't speak the language? So the first job was for the teachers to start making it bilingual, talking to the children in Spanish and in Quechua. And it was really hard in the beginning, because if an American brought me gifts of textbooks or something, it was pictures of mom and dad sitting on the sofa watching television with their children. Yeah. And pictures of mom going shopping in a supermarket, walking down an aisle, which was just not in the frame of reference of these children at all. They couldn't relate to it. No electricity, no TV, you know, that sort of thing. So the idea was to eventually, the government did agree to produce books in Quechua. And I was, you know, I've been here 14 years. The growth is phenomenal all over Peru, because they have introduced all the subjects that elementary children, my children, went to school in Santa Barbara, not very different. So there's language, there's math, and there is art, and that's what the children study. But it's always one teacher that has to teach everything. And the problems arrive not so much that they're not teachers, but that the children don't get fed well, so they're so tired they have to walk 2-3 hours to school across the mountains if there's a blizzard or a snowstorm, or if their parents are digging up the fields, they miss the education. And by our children's fund, and I'm sure there are other organizations that sponsor, I mean, Peru's got hundreds of schools and hundreds of mountains, by just helping them a little, it's phenomenal what they've done. They are almost able to compete with children whose first language is Spanish. They come to school every day of the school vacation because they love it so much. They're really motivated now thanks to the teachers, and the teachers are motivated because we give the children food, and we give the teachers a warm place to stay, and we give them blankets in winter, and just little things make a huge difference. As you can hear, I can go on and on and on this subject.
Well, I mean, to me, I know for me and my, and so many of my listeners, we know that the children are the hope of the future. We hear that, but I mean, this is just more true than we can ever imagine. And here you are, both going off to a place connecting to the earth again, which is such a powerful thing, and then taking time to create an educational process for children. And I mean, you may not have ever heard of this woman, Marva Nettles Collins. She basically did a lot of work in the ghettos of Chicago, taking kids that couldn't get into schools or weren't able to, and helping to educate them and giving them an opportunity. And what they discovered is that with a good environment and good support, these kids were learning faster than a lot of kids going to public school. And here you're talking about your children being able to do very well too. So I think that just bespeaks a lot of what you're doing.
Well, the nicest part of it is that working with the teachers, we're all encouraging the children to keep up their ancient traditions, because it works for them as farmers to honor the earth, to make little offerings, and to encourage them to wear their ponchos because it's made for that cold climate. Whenever our groups come, they are happy to perform their little dances and traditional songs. So the children are really proud now. Of course, it's just a drop in the ocean. It's just a few mountaintops that we can visit. But as you say, it makes a huge difference to give the children the opportunity to get that.
Yes, and to put that consciousness and that level of reverence there, and to have it functioning and expand the culture, so that there can be a gap, a bridge between ancient ways and modern ways, and still to retain the beauty of the ancient teachings. I mean, this is extraordinary. And things that I know, as I'm looking through your book, and I don't know if this is if this is something that, you'd have, you know, knowledge of, but I was watching a TV program because there's a wonderful picture about on the page that says Pachamama, your earth garden, and it's of pictures of different types of corn, I believe. And and one of the things that I didn't know until a program on public broadcasting recently was that the modern-day corn here in our country is like a mere shadow of the wholesome food that corn used to be. And it just makes me curious because they were saying at one point in time corn was a very powerful grain that, you know, had, instead of today it's mostly starch that, you know, becomes sugar, but it used to be with protein and other wholesome things. And I'm just looking at this picture of this ancient looking kind of corn and going, geez, I wonder if this is an example of corn that is actually a powerful, wholesome food, that, you know, that could be restored sometime, you know, to our gardens again. But that's a little bit off the subject.
Actually, that's an interesting, it's an interesting subject because the Inca always regarded corn as the most sacred product. They did ceremonies, they called it sara. They had, you know, a lot of the ancient weavings and textiles and ceramics are honoring the corn. It's called choclo. And definitely today what they offer it at the table isn't the sweetened, modified corn that you get in the States. It's not sweet at all. And in fact, they grind it, they dry it and grind it, and then it's a food source that they use all through the years. So the other part of the Andes is they supplement any protein deficiency with what they used to call foods of the gods, which are now becoming known in the States called quinoa and kiwicha. These are the Andean grains that are just marvelous food sources, and especially if people don't want to eat too much meat and, you know, stay away from that, the diet here with the quinoa that grows all over the mountains is an excellent combination to eat with the corn. There's tarwi beans, which is a legume that they don't know in the United States. And that's also high in protein, very tasty. So in actual fact, if you look at the Quechua workers who I'm surrounded by, they are very fit and healthy. None of them are overweight, and they eat very well. I come from South Africa, so we were always exposed to little children suffering from malnutrition in a disease called kwashiorkor. And when I came to the Andes, even though these children are poor, they have no money, they don't, you know, have any luxuries in life, there is no starvation because of the corn and the grains and the cereals. And again, they do ceremonies to honor them. So this corn thing, the point that you mentioned, I'm going to look into it a little further, but when we bring healers, they do a ceremony which just keeps life in balance. So if there's a group and you came, you know, it would just be about honoring your own personal journey. And that's when they make offerings to Mother Earth. They give her the best of the corn because they know that in future she's going to provide them with the food they need. And they even have a name for this. It's called Aini. Aini is giving to receive, basically. It's a reciprocal exchange of energy. It keeps everything in balance. So here we are. We honor Pachamama with all her best products. And then we go and harvest our fields, and everybody joins in. And then when it's time for the harvest, the people are fed. So it's kind of interesting things where they haven't as yet modified food and taken out all the goodness. And despite the poverty and despite the need for clothes and school books and everything, the diet aspect of it is very good. But not all over Peru. I don't want to pretend that there aren't fertilizers and contamination and contaminated rivers. That is so. But when you go up into the mountains, so far they've been preserved very well.
Wow. Well, Carol, this is extraordinary. And I mean, as a way, this could be like that giving to receive kind of thing, because you may not know this, but here, there's small groups of people that are preserving the seeds that are not genetically modified. And Danyon Brinkley, who is an amazing spiritual teacher that is helping many people to learn to become hospice volunteers or to be compassionate when someone is in a lot of pain, he was making mention at a speech that through our Congress, there's a bill, H.R. 875, and a part of this bill, a couple of paragraphs, they are basically, if this thing passes, according to Danyon Brinkley, it would make it illegal for people to have home gardens in which they used self-replicating seeds, that they would have to actually buy seeds from Monsanto or Cargill, which are genetically modified so that they don't reproduce a seed that you can plant the next year, that you have to go buy the seeds year in and year out. I mean, this is, to me, such an atrocity. And so here you are in this place with these wonderful things. And, my gosh, when people go and get your book, I never saw the flower of a quinoa plant, but you've got an amazing picture in there. So anyway, this I don't know if there's any opportunity for some of the seeds and exported here to this country, because there would be people that would want to be able to plant a corn that is actually incredibly nourishing and some of these other things. So,
well, someone was here the other day, and she said she literally, I hate to say this over the radio, but she smuggled a couple of corn seeds into the United States. And she planted them in her garden for the very reason that, you know, she'd never seen such. And she said, oh, actually, she's living in Alaska, believe it or not. And she says that it's just every year they come up, she gets the seeds, she's growing them, and she's eating the corn. And the trouble is that you're not allowed to do that officially. You can't go through customs bringing in any plant material. So if sort of people higher up can sort of get into this particular subject, would be fantastic. Because, you know, the people here naturally save their seeds. And in fact, my gardens will never look like Victoria Gardens or anything, because the guys who work in the garden will never pull out a plant after it's flowered. They'll wait till the buds dry and go to seed, and then they'll carefully keep them for the next year. It's just natural to do that here, but it would be great if there was a way that, you know, these seeds can move into the States and be in their original form, as you mentioned before.
Yes, well, there's a woman that I'll make a note to get in touch with. Her company does different grant proposals to foundations for research, and I'm just kind of wondering if we could possibly connect to that. And we've got Colorado State University near me that is a major agricultural institution who knows? I don't know about the ways to open doors, but I'm taking this trip around the Maypole with you and your book of Chakra Gardens as an inspiration for me to see if me or some of my listeners can help carry this forward. You know, I think this would just be not only a gift to the back to the earth, but something that could be important in the years ahead for us to be able to get our hands on some wonderfully nourishing food.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Now, your book, people, of course, on the radio have to use their imagination to see all these beautiful pictures. But I'd like, can you tell us a little bit more, because it's so beautiful.
Well, the credit of the photography goes to a gentleman, Greg Asbury, who happened to visit Wilcatica as a guest, and he wandered through the gardens, and then he came back, and I happened to have just completed writing the book. And he said, oh, let me do this for you. And basically, he took the photographs. He came back one or two times more, because each season things change a lot. We have winter. We're opposite seasons from you, so we're going into winter right now. And he came back, took the pictures, and then he spent the whole of last year just putting the book together. So the credit of the photography goes to Greg Asbury, who's also a multitasking person. He has many interests and does many things. And he felt, I know that, you know, some people like to see things visually, that was the way to go. So that's how the beautiful photography came to be in this particular book. And then, well, we'll see where it goes next. You know, we sort of take things here just as they come.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I would love, I'm just kind of wondering, there may be an opportunity. I'll be at a conference with Reverend Michael Beckwith and his wife, Ricky Byers Beckwith, coming up the end of this month. And they've done things. Their choir sang at President Obama's inauguration here, and Reverend Michael has been on with Oprah Winfrey in a number of things. And if there were a way to help him to get a copy of your book, when I see him, I'm just excited at the possibilities that could do to help move things ahead, because you're doing some extraordinary things there, and if nothing, you know, and the pictures in this, thanks to your beautiful writing and Greg, I mean, this is an extraordinary. There wouldn't be a coffee table in anyone's home, Bill Gates, you name it, that wouldn't want to see this beautiful work. So.
Well, that's good to know. Yes.
Yeah. So I know in something like this, is there. You know, I don't know if there was some parts that was more fun or some that were a little more challenging when you did your book. How did that go?
Well, I was asked this question before. I actually had fun from the minute I've arrived in Peru 14 years ago until now, almost 15 years, because I think it's just a lot of freedom to do what I really wanted to do and challenges. For example, you can't just go to a hardware shop and find all the parts you need for a house. You have to find someone who's going to make them. And you can't just go to a nursery and buy the plants. You've got to go hiking in the mountains, make cuttings, come back. I had all the staff out today going because they found animal manure to put into the gardens, which is like gold to us here because it's not a dairy industry here. So all of them went and joined in. So each little activity turns into a fun activity. The Quechua are just amazing workers. And so when I got to write this down, it was very easy. It was just telling the story of how each garden evolved. And then, as I say, you know, the universe all stepped in, and when I didn't know how would I in Peru find an editor for this book, again, a group came, and Taranda King from Santa Barbara said, Carol, I'd love to edit your book, and I won't be charging because I feel this is something I want to do for Pachamama. And so we were definitely moving along that there wasn't pain. Honestly, not a very hard thing. It was just fun, and you know, just working with people who are just very positive and very pleasant to be with. I can actually, when I go back to South Africa to visit, I leave them in charge, and then I always get reports about how nice they are, because they are happy people basically. You know, they're happy to have the jobs, and they're happy to have their salary and their medical benefits. And so, again, it's this irony where anything I do, I receive the help I need, and then I can help back. And it's just, I think if I had one thing I wanted people to introduce back to the world, is just this concept of irony, the reciprocity, where you do something and it's just a natural process that something else comes back to you, you know, better than you expect or imagine.
Oh.
And
wow.
Even the Quechua who work here, when they go off on a weekend, you'll find them working on the brother's farm or with the uncle or with someone. And Aini crosses every aspect of life, where children practice it, adults practice it, you even going back into the gardens, you're practicing it with the flowers, because you can sit there and the flower gives you what it needs, whether it's the colors. You know, you'll have noticed that the gardens are all grouped according to the general color of the chakra. Of course, colors can differ for different people, but the main flowers and the main chakras all have specific colors. So even the flower, you giving attention to the flower is giving you back healing energy. The old tree, you make an offering to the tree, and in exchange, the tree is sharing wisdom with whoever cares to go and sit beneath it. Same thing with the food. You know, you go up to the school village and you think you're just taking money or books, and in return the children sing and they dance and they open the heart chakra for the guests that come. People tend to come, as you started your program, there are all sorts of stresses and problems in the Western world as well. And so this is just nature working with people so that everybody gains. It's sort of a win-win situation.
Yeah.
What I hope, you know.
Well, that's exciting, because of, like you say, this natural reciprocity acting out in nature, and in interactions with people in nature. I mean, this is to me the ancient foundations that are showing practical wisdom for surviving in today's stressful world.
Yes. And the good thing about it, too, is that there's no dogma attached to it. So, you know, one thing about this country is that the Catholic Church was always accepting of the ancient traditional people, as an example. So if you have a Catholic festival, they've blended it very well into the belief of Pachamama could be Mary, you know, a mountain god entity they'll call it one of the religious spirits or saints, and it's kind of fun, I should say, to see how everybody just is very allowing. I'm talking about, you know, something like Catholicism. I'm not sure that's always the case with some of the very modern religious organizations, but nobody is told in this whole system, ancient system that I'm talking about, plus the gardens, people can have an opportunity to just go and be with nature without there being rules and instructions. That's the part that I think is important too, that each person gets what he or she needs by placing themselves in that position with nature. And of course, the main thing is that they can go home and do the gardens themselves, wherever they live. You don't have to be at Wilcatica in the Sacred Valley of Peru in order to build this chakra garden. You know, you can do it at home anywhere on the planet, in whatever space you have. And you can do it with the symbols that you relate to, and you can do it with the plants that grow in your area, that sort of thing. You know, that's what I think was exciting for me to realize that we can connect little chakra gardens all over the planet, and that energetically is a very positive, upbeat kind of energy that goes around.
Oh, yes. Oh, so needed today. This is extraordinary. And now, to get your book, of course, there's different places. You have a website, chakragardens.com,
yes.
C-H-A-K-R-A.
That's right. The best website for the book would be www.chakragardens.com.
Okay. chakragardens.com.
Yes, and that would link you straight to the book and what you have to do. We have sort of an offering there where you can either buy the book, or if you make a donation, then you get the book, a certain donation, you get the book for free, whichever has a gift, I should say. You know, whatever works for people. And we always invite them to come back and tell us how their own chakra garden work is doing, wherever they may do that. Right now I've had people visit from England, from South Africa, from all over America, from Canada, and they've all built a little aspect of the gardens or whichever garden whichever you could say energy center in their own body that they feel they want to work with. So it's kind of that's the part that we're still to sort of see how it goes from here onwards.
That's just so exciting. And now I'm wondering if you are going to share, you know, some advice with people, because some folks are going to be able to make a pilgrimage. I don't know if you considered doing anything in terms of movies. I mean, there's MySpace, YouTube. There's a number of ways that people could get a bit of a taste of what you're doing for those that aren't able to come to this and are so busy that they may not get the book, but can get the word out there. So one, I wanted to invite if some of that can, you know, you might be able to get some people to help you put some of that on the internet.
Yes, you know, just recently we're talking about that, and I was just telling someone today I'm going back to the States in June, and I'm going to buy a little video camera, and I'm going to create these short little YouTube scenarios of to give people a taste of life in the Andes. Little things like that, all you say I'm aware of. Of course, this has all evolved since I haven't been living in the States, so I'm learning about it. And, yes, it would be great, great all round. I mean, we would be happy to take people and show them the children in the schools and then show them the farming and then just show them also the luxury of just being in a garden and going to Machu Picchu. And
sure.
The ancient sites are all around us. They're amazing places to visit.
Are you ready for this, Carol? I don't know if you heard of this fellow. He did a TV program that was very endearing to a number of youngsters. His name was Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, of course I know Mr. Rogers.
Well, I was hoping you did, because
my children grew up with Mr. Rogers. Yes.
Okay, because I am sitting here and Holy Spirit is saying to me that you have an opportunity to be not Mr. Rogers, but you know, Ms. Carol, or you know, whatever you would want to take us on journeys, because we can now through YouTube and different things actually connect in a profound way to this wisdom.
Well, as long as I don't have to say it's a beautiful day in the Andes.
Well, okay. Since it would be your own program, I know that you can create a beautiful slogan or line, and you don't even have to ask us if we can spell Machu Picchu, you know.
Yes.
those kind of things. Good old Mr. Rogers, he made it tough on us sometimes.
Yes.
But God love him, and God love you. This is so exciting. So people, I want you to go visit chakragardens.com whenever you can. Get that book. Send your prayers to Carol so that she can get this work out there and be a communication link to us all over the world to see a living example of people and nature flowing in harmony and just this beauty. And as we got about 60 seconds, Carol, there was something you wanted to say in wrapping up to our listeners today.
I've just enjoyed talking to you, Kenneth, and appreciate that. You've given me plenty of food for thought as well. So, you know, I hope we can have a follow-up to this one day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, our mutual friend, Wendy Jane, she doesn't do any of this stuff. She is like this magical pixie in the background, connecting.
That's right.
People.
That's Wendy.
So we have to say a thanks to her, and pause and just wrap up and say thank you, Carol, for taking time to bring us your love and this inspiration of Chakra Gardens, and that through loving yourself and giving yourself a wonderful life, you're supporting us to open up to nature and to open up to freeing up our lives. What an extraordinary gift.
Well,
thank you,
Kenneth. Appreciate
you.
It.
Oh, my pleasure. And beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in again week after week. Our goal here, our pledge, our commitment is to bring value to you so that your lives may blossom and, and flourish in the midst of whatever is going on, because at the heart, at the core, the very source is peace, is love, is the ever-flowing goodness of our Creator. And from that place, I just want to say thank you, Carol, and thank you, beloved listeners, for tuning in and for being present with us. Until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let go of it.